This is UN News. I'm Conor Lennon. It has been 15 years since the terrorist attack on the UN compound at the Canal Hotel in Baghdad, the darkest day in our lives at the United Nations, in the words of the Secretary General at the time, Kofi Annan. The truck bomb killed 22 international and local staff, including the top UN representative in Iraq, Sergio Vieira de Mello. Current and former staff who survived the blast on the 19th of August 2003 have been reflecting on the tragedy, which marked the first time the UN was deliberately targeted on a massive scale. At the time of the blast, veteran television producer Francis Mead was undertaking a new challenge in Iraq, reporting for the UN humanitarian news agency, IRIN. He was at the Canal Hotel that afternoon for a press briefing. It was disrupted by a loud crash, and then everything went black.
My name's Francis Mead. I'm a TV producer with the UN. At the time, I was actually working for UNICEF, but I requested to go to Iraq and work for the UN news service called IRIN. And I was writing stories about the humanitarian situation in Iraq on sort of electricity shortages and water shortages and things like that. The day it happened, in fact, I was doing a story about mines and unexploded ordnance, because that was a huge issue in Iraq. And in fact, there was a press conference that very day in the Canal Hotel downstairs. I think it was started at about 3:30 in the afternoon. So, you know, we were sitting in an ordinary room, a bunch of people were there, a couple of cameras were rolling at the back. And then suddenly there was an enormous crash. Everything went dark. It's hard to tell how long, maybe a second or two, a few seconds. And then the sort of light came back up again somehow. I think it's because, in fact, a lot of debris and dust passed through the room and made everything pretty much black for 2 seconds. So you can't react. All you know is that there's this enormously loud crash and blackness. And then suddenly you're looking at an ordinary room covered in dust. And your brain kicks in, you know, the adrenaline kicks in. And the first thought was, that was an explosion. I survived the explosion. That's what your brain, I'm still alive. And then your brain does go into survival mode. The next thought that I had was, well, what happens if we rush outside? Maybe there'll be people waiting outside for us with machine guns to machine gun us down. I think that was the moment, actually, that I was most scared. I wasn't really that scared after that. There was that one moment of real fear. And it, as I say, it's that survival thing that kicks in. I wasn't injured, by the way. I had maybe a tiny little cut on my foot. Other people were hit by glass, some people quite badly. Nobody was killed in that room, but people not very far away were killed. What had happened was, you know, the corner of the whole building had collapsed, not very far from that conference room, and people in the lobby had been killed. Other people were dazed, covered in dust. People look like white dummies covered in this white dust and sometimes streaked with blood. So I remember that very vividly, and people just sitting dazed. I scrabbled around looking for something on the ground, and it was my little mini tape recorder. For some reason, I wanted to find it. I think that your brain is saying, let's sort of get everything in order again and sort of do what you can. And then there was a military guy that I'd been talking to earlier. So I think I actually turned to him and said, what should we do? Because I thought, well, he'll know what to do. He's a military guy. And he was actually sort of shouting out, everybody stay where you are. Not many people did actually stay where they were. But it was kind of good to have an authoritative voice saying something like that. In reality, people started stumbling out through the dust and through the rubble. What I do remember is some, you know, remarkably quick response from many people after the bombing, because there were a lot of people with military training. There were also a lot of people with emergency EMS training. And even as I stumbled out, people had already been pulled out of the rubble, and there was a little patch of grass just outside the front entrance. And there were already about 8 people laid out on this grass. Some of them were probably dead, I think. And particularly personal moment that I always feel bad about. I stood next to that patch of grass looking down at these people laid out there, and a man was just stirring and becoming conscious. And he looked up at me for a moment, and I didn't know what to do because I was really afraid that maybe if I interfered, I would make things worse. And I regret that because as soon as I got back from the bombing, I went and did a first aid training course and so on to give myself more confidence. And I realized what I could have done is just sort of stooped down, held his hand and spoken to him. But I didn't know what to do, so I actually moved away. But, you know, other people very quickly started ferrying these people to help and so on. And later I found, you know, things to do. I helped carry water and I helped carry some stretchers. There was a colleague, an Iraqi colleague in the office who'd been hit on the head and he was dazed. And I sat with him and talked to him for a while. So I found things to do because after an incident like that, there's a really strong desire to help, to do something, combined with fear that you'll screw things up. You know, you have emotions that come up. And I was never angry at the people who did the bombing, interestingly enough. You kind of know it's not aimed at you personally, and that has a bad side to it too. It can erase your personality. I've heard other survivors saying that's a really negative thing because you're not aimed personally, your individuality is erased. But in my case, I never felt angry at the people who set the bomb because it didn't feel like it had very much to do with me. It was, you know, a symbolic and physical attack on the UN to create more chaos, to make the country uncontrollable. It was actually carried out by Al-Qaeda in Iraq, who then became ISIS, in fact, so that's very relevant. Well, the Baghdad bombing was seen as a watershed moment because I think it was, at that time, the largest attack on a civilian element of the UN with the largest lethal impact. So it really changed things. I think the UN since then has literally spending 10 times more on security now than it did at that time. It's necessary to let people know how dangerous it's become, unfortunately, to work for not just the UN, but for NGOs in many countries. We've now become a target. I suspect many people don't know that there were major attacks on the UN in Algeria and Nigeria, which killed similar numbers of people. One other aspect to it is that, interestingly enough, I think this is a psychological phenomenon. If you share an experience with people and including a terrible experience like the bombing, you do feel a sense of bonding, I think. So one of the outcomes for me, honestly, is that I felt more connected with the UN after that. Working for the UN for all its imperfections was a really important thing to do. And that's partly because there are many remarkable people that I saw in Iraq working for the UN who were doing a fantastic job both before and after the bombing, and I really respected that. So in some ways, it actually solidified and strengthened my thoughts about working for the UN and taking it seriously as something really worthwhile.